on the shell casing, what's really pretty interesting is the firing pin impression,
Yeah.
which is also another identifier, right?
Yes.
And there's round firing pins, there's like octagonal or something like that, right?
Yeah, elliptical is a Glock, like a lot of times a Glock has, so the shape of the firing pin, sometimes even the depth that it strikes the primer, basically the orientation, is it dead centered on this thing? Is it consistently a little bit off?
Right.
I have a case now where that ShotSpotter program,
Yes.
right? So there's a case there was this was one of those you open up the ShotSpotter thing and you listen to it, it's like pow pow pow, 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 pow,
Yeah.
So we'll talk about class characteristics, right? Here's the value of class characteristics. A Glock has different rifling than most other firearms. I think it's called polygonal rifling, right? So a lot of rifling is cut into the metal, whereas a Glock, like basically they put the rifling, it's like on a rod and hammers hit the barrel and they put the impressions on. This isn't, I'm not a firearms examiner or anything like that. This is just through some training that I had in this discipline. So the rifling for a Glock is like a lot more faint. Remember, I don't know if you remember when the Glock first came out, they were saying you can't match the bullets, you can match the
Yeah,
cartridge.
I had heard that, and I had heard that's why the police department wanted to go away from it because they wouldn't be able to identify the ballistics of the police shooting.
Which really wasn't really true, but it was much, you can do it, but it's much more, it's quite often more difficult, right? Especially when you have consecutively manufactured guns. So like every time you put the tool that you use to transfer rifling to the barrel of the brand new barrel of the gun, even that tool gets a little bit of wear, microscopic changes in it, right? So now when I go to use the next barrel, it's different. And then I use the next barrel, it's different, right? But from this barrel to the next one that's manufactured, it's not as different from this barrel to say 100 barrels later. They're going to have a lot more significant differences. But they can even match consecutively manufactured barrels using polygon that have polygonal rifling. So a good firearms examiner can do all this stuff. So I had a case where the firearms examiner reports that the bullet jacket stripped off when it went through the windshield of this car, and it has it was fired from a barrel with polygonal rifling. And then there was some cartridge cases, only three, and they had elliptical firing pin impressions, which is also a class characteristic for a Glock. So now,
Right.
out of all the other firearms evidence recovered at this scene, dozens of pieces, there were only certain ones that had class characteristics from a Glock. So I was able to isolate the Glock to this one portion of this whole block where all these shots were fired. So that's where your class characteristics come in really handy. So it's so if the Glock was all the way on the other end of the block and you got the polygonal rifling, it was in a car too. And what's a car? A car is an unfixed target. A car can move, right? So did the car move down the scene? But so class characteristics are really helpful like that. One of the things we can tell that help us to get directionality when we're dealing with sheet metal, like so bullets striking a car, very common, right? Very big part of your crime scenes. So the bullet's going to strike your painted sheet metal, and it's going to maybe pinch a little piece of paint in between the bullet and the sheet metal. So that paint won't get stripped off, but then the rest of the whole ricochet mark, the paint's going to get stripped off. And then the paint out here at the margins gets these fractures in it, right? So, and you can see the fractures. If we know that the bullet struck one end of this ricochet crease, these fractures are pointing backwards, back towards where the bullet initially struck, right? And I always liken them to the wake of a boat, right? So you can see in this mark right here, you can see there's a little bit of paint pinched right here, right? And the rest of the paint stripped off. And then we have these fracture lines that are all pointing back towards where the bullet initially struck the surface.
Right.
Here we have paint pinched, we have fracture lines. Right. So these are three different ways you can tell which way the bullet was traveling. We have this paint pinch where it initially struck. You have these fracture lines that look like the wake of a boat. See how a boat moves?
Yeah, absolutely. I can
see. It creates a wake like that. Right.
So I don't know if you weren't explaining it to me, I don't know if I could be able to spot this on a scene. I think it takes a more trained eye than.
I'll tell you, you know right away. You know right away. This is the underside of a painted surface.
Although you know something, John, since I retired 9 years ago, I haven't been to a single crime scene.
Yeah.
I'm not getting called in the middle of the night, hey Sarge, come to this crime scene, you know?
Oh, I know what you mean, man. Let me, okay. So one of the ways we can tell where the bullet strikes the sheet metal is where it pinches the paint, right? Another way we can tell is by the paint fracture lines, which direction they're pointing in. Another way we can tell which direction the bullet was going is by the profile of the crease. So the bullet's going to leave like a defect, a crease in the surface that it strikes, right? Depending on the surface, if it's a yielding surface or a frangible surface.
Right.
So when a bullet strikes a surface like that Wonder Board I was talking about, very crumbly stuff. So the bullet strikes it. As soon as it strikes it, it goes down and then it starts working its way back up.
Right.
So now you have, let's say we have a 2-inch defect in something that we believe is from a bullet, right? And it's a frangible substrate like that Wonder Board is, right? So if we look and all we have is this, you know, 2-inch defect, and we're like, well, I wonder which way it was going. One end of that defect is going to be deeper than the other end. And the deeper end is where the bullet first struck. So it strikes, it displaces a lot of that that substrate, and then it sort of builds a ramp and works its way out, right? So the deeper end on a frangible substrate like that is going to be where your point of impact occurred. That's your entry side. It's the opposite, right? See, here's a frangible material. See, it goes in, it kicks all that stuff out and starts working its way out. The deeper side of the defect is where the bullet initially struck, right? So it's the opposite with sheet metal. So think about it, the bullet strikes the sheet metal, as it's traveling the metal stretches, you know, and then it works its way out of the crease. So I'll show you so the deeper side of something that stretches like sheet metal, the deeper side is going to be your exit side.
Right.
And I'll show you a picture of that. So if you look at this crease right here, this is from a bullet being fired. This is why I fired this into this was a hood that it was actually an aluminum hood. So if we're looking at this, we've got three indicators right here that tell us which way this bullet was going. We have our wake lines here, right? Our lines going back towards the point of impact. We have our paint that was pinched right here. Right. See how there's paint missing all the way down the whole crease, except for this point right here. Right. And as the bullet's traveling, it goes so deep that it actually fractures the metal and then it exits. Right. So the deeper portion is going to be our exit side. So we have three things here telling us: the paint, this is where the bullet struck; the depth, this is where the bullet exited; the paint lines, that's the direction it was traveling. You know, you might not have all three of those things, but sometimes you'll just have one, and then you can make your call. You can make a call on it.
Well, even with when a bullet strikes a body, the entrance wound is highly different than the exit wound. The entrance wound is usually a nice little neat round hole Whereas the exit wound is usually has a tremendous amount of trauma to it and causes, like, you know, almost like an avulsion as it exits the body. Not all the time, but sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Not all. But so exactly what you're saying, Bill. You might not have it all the time, but when you do have it, this could be your indicator, you know.
Right.
Another thing that causes the exit to be larger is the bullet deforming and tumbling.
Right.
And that'll make you a bigger hole, you know. So sometimes, like if you come to a crime scene and you see a crease in something, like if I'm looking at this right here, I'm going to tell you, you know, oh, which way is the bullet going? I'm going to say, you know what? I can't tell. I don't have any of the characteristics that would give me that information. You know, I think three of the most important words for learning and for having credibility sometimes, even though, you know, for us talking to our bosses, it would kill our credibility. But yeah. In front of a jury, I think the three words that'll help you learn too. Because if you're Poindexter, you know, Mr. Peabody, remember that guy? He knew everything.
Yeah.
Right? Right. We're not Mr. Peabody. So for me, they're very liberating words. I don't know. Hey, John, which way is this bullet going? You know what? I don't know. I don't have any of the things I need to tell me. You know, if there was only one shot fired and the cartridge case is all the way over on this side and there's a bullet hole in the wall over there, guess what? The bullet was going that way, right? And you could tell me that. Anybody can tell me. If you want me to look at this mark and give you a directionality, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't know.
You know, I think a lot of this stuff, cops should really learn this. Maybe they can't, this would be too much to give them in the academy, but certainly ongoing training and in-service training, you should keep learning forensic science, because I learned a lot of this stuff late in my career. You know, a lot of it too, I learned from when I was teaching at a college. Because I had to learn some of this stuff that, you know, I didn't concern myself with, because the NYPD has a crime scene unit, you know, one of the best in the world, and ballistics experts, and I didn't need to know all this shit, or so I thought. But as you said, you know, as that old adage, knowledge is power, and it's so true. When you can read this stuff yourself and see some of this stuff yourself, you don't need to ask someone, and you can make, you know, not just assumptions, because you know what an assumption does, right? But you can make an educated guess, a hypothesis of what happened. And that's when you work with detectives, that's 3/4 of their job. Is I used to have this detective named Joe the Lip, and he was always hypothesizing and theorizing. And I used to always say, Joe, stop hypothesizing and theorizing and start typewriting your reports. You know? But that's how detectives come to, you know, understand what may have happened by creating scenarios of what they think may have happened.
Yeah, you know, that's what I really miss working by myself, you know, is having someone like, but a lot of times I'll work on a case where they've hired an investigator who's a retired, you know, MOS from somewhere and they're in the same boat a lot of times. I have this case in Florida. This guy retired like in the, you know, I think he came on in like the 70s and you know, he was an old timer and he was a great detective in New York. And we were just talking and he goes, you know, he goes, I miss this. I miss having somebody to bounce these ideas off of, because it really it helps a lot.
That's, you know, so important. That is so, so important.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Bounce things off each other. And, you know, that was the thing, being a boss in the squad. I always trusted my detectives till I didn't. No, I always trusted their opinions because they were the investigators, you know.
Right.
They were talking to people. They were interviewing. They were interrogating. Let's sit down. Let's talk about this. What do you think? You know.
Yeah.
And sometimes none of us knew. And then we have to go back and redo things. Relook at it in a fresh perspective. Let's come back tomorrow morning. We'll start fresh, you know.
Right.
But because it's a science, you know. They talk about being an investigator is an art and a science, and it's so true.
Oh,
and
it is.
Science, of course, is some of the things you do: forensic science, ballistics, you know, the science of gunshot wounds, blood spatter, all of that stuff. And the art of being a detective is to go out and talk to people, you know.
Yes.
Interview, yes. Interrogation, you know. Schmooze, that Yiddish word, schmooze.
Schmooze, yeah, yeah.
Right? You schmooze people so they'll talk to you. And there's so much truth behind that.
Yeah.
You know, you talk to a detective in Harlem, or you talk to a detective in Brooklyn, you talk to a detective in Queens, and the successful ones all have an ability to be liked by the people that they work for.
Yeah.
Because no one gives information to someone they don't like.
Right. You know?
So that's where that Yiddish word comes from, schmoozing, right?
Yeah, definitely, man. I love it. I was never good at that. You know, that's why I ended up in this niche where I'm at, which is perfect for me because, you know, I wasn't good at interviewing people. You know, if I had to, I would never be the bad cop. You know, because
that also takes a whole lot of patience in itself.
Yes,
like yeah. You have patience in this area,
right?
To look at the scientific, the science behind ballistics and forensics and that stuff, and a detective has the patience in talking to people.
Yeah,
getting information, like being more of a people person. You know.
Right, that's why crime scene was perfect, because they're all dead people, you know. So it's like I don't have to talk to these.
You don't have to talk to them, you know.
and following somebody, surveillance. Well, I was horrible at that. Horrible. I always lose them. Always, or I get made. I get made, or I lose them.
So. I was pretty good at that because I worked in anti-crime for 6.5 years.
So okay. Yeah.
Pretty good at that, you know. And I worked in neighborhoods where you could blend in.
Like, well, I was actually better in uniform and sneaking up on people than I was anywhere else, you know, because I could play, you know, I could play a role, like I'm writing a ticket or I'm doing something, and I already know who's the pitcher, who's got the money, and, you know,
right.
I make my collars. Like, housing, we made collars like crazy before the merge. Like, it was, no big deal. But, so that kind of thing. But as far as following somebody with a car or following somebody on foot, I wasn't too good at that. Narcotics, you had to do it, you know, when I was ghosting somebody, I'd be following the undercover. It was my favorite tool was a dog. I had a dog. I used to bring my dog to work. Because think about it, if you're walking a dog, right, because what's the dealer going to do? He's going to walk the undercover this way, and then maybe walk him back this way.
Right.
Who's following?
Stay away from that dog.
Yeah. But if I have a dog, I got a right to go back and forth because I'm walking my dog, right?
That's right.
It's not like me just out there, you know, with the beer in the paper bag, you know.
Playing that role.
Yeah. So, good stuff, man. But, yeah, so the three of the best words are I don't know, you know. I don't know.
Hey, if you don't know, you can't make it. You can't bullshit someone that's a professional.
Right. And you know how that goes too, right? Like you say something to some boss, says, "Hey, yeah, John, what do you got here?" Perp was standing over here, right? And if you're not sure about it, next thing you know, you see it on the 6 o'clock news. Oh, so according to crime scene, the perpetrator standing like, you're like, oh fuck, what did I just do, man? You know.
Well, I used to write those. First, they were called bullets, and then they were called the preliminary investigative worksheet, and it became term paper that you had to write at work, you know,
right.
And you would see exactly your details as to what occurred and recreated in the newspaper.
Right.
Because DCPI gave exactly what you wrote to the newspaper, or you hear it come out of the police commissioner's mouth.
Yeah.
Exactly what you wrote, you know.
That's even worse. Yeah.
Well, you just hope that you were accurate enough that he wasn't saying something that was, you know,
right,
read in writing later on, you know.
Right. But yeah, it's like you said, sometimes, you know, this is what it appears like initially, and then the investigation can flip that over. And it's like, oh, it's not what we thought at all, you know.
I used to, you know, when I would call the chief of detective's office and have a homicide, and you'd be working all night, and then I'd call the chief of D's office at like before 6 in the morning, they wanted it. And the detective would say, "What do you got, Sergeant?" I'd say, "We got nothing right now." He goes, "Oh, the chief's not going to like that." And I would say, "I don't really give a fuck what he likes."
Exactly.
I mean, this is what it is. What am I going to make up shit, happen shit, so he can be Like, right. Smile as he's having his cup of coffee. We got nothing. We got balls across the chin right now. We got a suspect name to be named later. We got nothing. You know?
Right. Yeah. Oh, he's not going to like that. I know, right?
He's not going to like that. I don't know what to fucking tell him there.
Right. Sorry to hear that.
The Chief's not going to like that. Oh, my God.
Yep.